Your website calls you an ordinary guy, a high school teacher, but of course your own experience makes you quite unique. Why are you running for U.S. Senate in the state of Delaware?
Well, when my son was killed, I had this strong feeling that I had to take responsibility for the war, that it was my war, that I hadn't done enough soon enough to end it. And the running for Congress was the first time I ever tried to do anything about the war in a positive way rather than just to protest it. So I guess I'm working within the system to try and put an end to the war as well as outside the system because I'm still protesting.
But you have also experience above and beyond the fact that your son was brutally murdered. What is that experience that you feel you're bringing here to the table?
Well, the experience that I have, I mean, I was a teacher for 35 years, and I know how to talk to people. I know how to help people. That's what I did. I was a remedial teacher, and the kids who couldn't learn the things they were supposed to learn in the regular classroom came to me. And I got along really well with all the kids that I taught. The administration used to criticize me for getting along so well with the kids. When Nick died, they were at my house by the dozens. I had that kind of relationship with people. So I think identifying with people and identifying with people who are very much like me as well as people who are nothing like me is one of the strengths and talents that I have that I can use as a politician. I don't see our politicians as someone that I can identify with. Most of them are millionaires. They all wear suits with collars so starched I know it would hurt my neck. I'm not like that. I'm just a regular guy. I wear jeans and an anti-war t-shirt. And I promise the people in the state of Delaware that if they elect me, I'll be sworn in those same t-shirts and jeans.
You're running against an incumbent Republican senator, Mike Castle, I believe,
right,
on the Green Party ticket. Was your decision to run as a Green instead of a Democrat prudent or issue-based?
Well, it was both. It was issue-based because the Democrats don't support the issues that mean so much to me. Senator Biden, Joe Biden, who is here in Delaware, announced himself as the peace candidate, and then he goes and he votes to fund the war. The Democrat that's running against Mike Castle, his name is Dennis Spivak, he calls himself a peace candidate, but he thinks it's irresponsible to end the war now. I think it's irresponsible to let it go on another 12 minutes, because in another 12 minutes, another person is going to die over there. So I couldn't be a Democrat. They actually called and asked me to talk to them about running on the Democratic ticket. And a friend of mine said, well, look at the money, look at the machinery that you would have working for you. I said, yeah, but look at the message. I can't deliver that message. So it's issue-oriented, but as far as prudence is concerned, my goal is not to get elected and become a politician. My goal is to make some changes, whatever way I can make them. And if getting elected or getting a whole bunch of votes and scaring the gajibers out of the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, can help to do that, then that's great. But I won't change an issue to get more votes. It's not about getting votes. It's not about my having a career as a politician. I'm a retired school teacher. I don't need to work. I don't want to work. I've done my share. So, you know, it's prudent. It's prudent not to be a Democrat because to be a Democrat doesn't do what I want to do.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about what you do want to do. You have several position papers on your website, bergforcongress.us.
Right.
Your vision of the American way of life is significantly different than the vision being promoted by the Bush administration, and of course by many preceding administrations, Democrat and Republican. Could you talk about this vision and what it will actually look like on the ground for the majority of the country's people?
Well, I think that the main thing that's wrong with politics today is that we no longer live in a democracy. We now live in a political system where corporations are governing us. If you can get the powerful corporations behind you and you can get their donations, then you can win an election. And most politicians don't seem to care about the average person working for a living. They don't care if he has medicine or not. I spoke to a man yesterday on the streets of Philadelphia on my way home from an interfaith walk for peace. And this man told me that last year he lost his daughter because she had an asthma attack. He couldn't afford to buy her medicine. I mean, people die on the street because their parents cannot afford medicine or they can't afford medicine for themselves. That's atrocious. And here we have these people in Congress that are doing nothing but standing up for the pharmaceutical companies so that they can make a big profit because that's what's good for the economy. Well, hell, I don't care about that's good for the economy. It's not good for the economy for that little girl who's dead. It's not good for the economy for her father who would give every cent he ever had in his life to have her back. And you can see the same mindset in all the issues. Look at our schools. They're trying to privatize our schools by taking out so much money from the schools that people feel that their children won't get an adequate education if they keep them in public school. And that seems to give the go-ahead for the administration to pull more money out. I just read within the last hour that Bush is pulling out another $40 billion or $40 million, I'm sorry, I don't know which, from education in his current budget. He's cutting education yet again. We can't do that. The next generation is the only resource that we have. That's all we have. There's no such thing as a natural resource that isn't human. Minerals in the ground and even oil in the ground is just mud, unless we have human beings that are capable of extracting it and doing things with it.
So could you be specific then about, you call them guarantees, that you would provide for every citizen?
Sure. A guaranteed single-payer health care for every American, regardless of their income. Guaranteed fix the education system, have adequate public schools throughout the United States, not just in a few spots here and there where it's popular. Fix Social Security, remove the ceiling on Social Security wages so that everybody pays the same percentage, not the rich pay a small percentage and the poor pay a high percentage. And while you're at it, maybe raise the floor on wages that are taxed too so that people who make practically nothing don't have to give some of it up. Fix the infrastructure of this country so that catastrophes like Katrina don't happen. They pulled the funding for the maintenance of the levees. Of course they fell apart. Of course they fell apart. And our bridges are falling apart, and our highways are becoming dangerous, and our police departments and fire departments are being stripped of personnel. We need these things. We need these things to combat natural disasters and unnatural disasters. And it seems to me that the mentality is if we don't spend any money on it, it'll stay like it is. Well, nature doesn't work that way. Nature doesn't work that way because when a levee becomes so old, it starts to deteriorate, and that's a law of science, and you can't have politicians compromising with Mother Nature. She doesn't compromise.
But given how compromised the political system is in this country, were you to become, actually, the state of Delaware's newest senator, who would then become your allies in manifesting some of these guarantees?
Well, first of all, I think that I am not the only third-party person running who is going to do a whole lot better than a lot of people think, because so many people are so fed up, not just with George Bush, who has a 29% approval rating, but with Congress that has only a 22% approval rating. So I think you're going to see a lot of new faces. And secondly, by the way, I'm running for Congress in the House of Representatives.
Thank you for the clarification.
But secondly, if I win, even if I weren't to win but were to get a significant percentage of the votes, that would send such a message to these people that they would start looking over their shoulders and they would start seeing the American people with their arms raised and ready to get rid of them. I think that my winning in itself would be a message. It would be a message about the war. It would be a message about social programs. And it would be a message about changing policies so that they are environmentally responsible.
Given the voting fraud, the election fraud that's been going on, what are your hopes in this realm? Are you taking, is your staff, are you taking any actions to make sure that their electronic voting is no more? Do you have any concerns about this issue?
Well, I have joined with a lot of other people in calling for and signing petitions and sending letters to Congress and to the editors of our paper, who rarely publish them, about doing away with electronic voting. But it was the Green Party, not the Democratic Party, that called for a recount in Ohio. It was the Green Party that raised funds in a very short period of time to mount that campaign and have that happen, and we'll do it again. I mean, if they are out and out stealing our votes from us, then, you know, there's really no hope for this country. I mean, that to me is, you know, you're living in a dictatorship. If there's no democracy, then it's a dictatorship. You know, it's one of the most hopeless descriptions of reality that I can think of.
But yet what you're doing is trying to reverse that reality.
I'm trying to. I really don't know whether it's possible or not, because I really don't know to what lengths the people in power now would go to maintain that power. I think that they would do a lot more than the general public thinks they would. And of course, what they do isn't reported by the general media. So without the media and without our vote, that's our entire democracy. The media is the eyes and the ears of the people. They tell the people what's happening so the people can make good decisions about whether they want what's happening to continue to happen or whether they want it to change. And we don't get that information anymore. And in addition to that, we think we're voting. We think we're voting for one person, and we end up voting for another. You know, the one thing that really has bothered me, and I've heard a lot of good things said about Al Gore in the last couple of weeks because of his movie, which I applaud, his movie and his stand on the environment and global warming. I applaud him for all of that. But what I can't understand is why in the year 2000, when all that it would have taken to challenge the vote would be for one senator from the United States Senate, which was at that time primarily the majority was Democratic, not one senator would stand up, not Al Gore, not John Kerry, not Kucinich, not Feingold, not one of them would stand up and challenge the vote that was so obviously a fraud. And, you know, that's, you ask me why I don't want to be a Democrat, you ask me, you know, is it a matter of prudence or issue? They're all in it together. They really are. It's the Millionaires Club. That's what Capitol Hill is. It's the Millionaires Club, and they all intend to keep it that way. And it's more important for them to further their careers than it is to stand up and take a stand. You know, when you stand up and you say something, you stand alone. And I know, because I did that when my son was killed, and I stood up and I said that Nicholas Berg died for the sins of George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld. That was the loneliest spot in the world. I was surrounded by about 40 people with microphones and cameras when I said that, but I felt so, so alone. And when I walked down the street after that, I felt so, so alone, because you expose yourself. You expose yourself to whatever people think about what you said. And these congressmen don't have the guts to do anything like that.
And yet you know now that you are not alone with reference to your feelings about what happened to your son. You certainly know that.
Well, I know that I'm not alone, but at the time when you say it, you don't know that. You don't know what the reaction is going to be. I was shocked that anyone even thought that I was, you know, anything but a rambling man in grief. And a couple months after that, a group in New York wanted to give me an award for being a courageous resistor, and a year after that, another group, Villanova University, in fact, gave me a substantial award for the stand I'd taken on peace in general, not so much that specific statement, but, you know, afterwards, with hindsight, yeah, sure, yeah, I know I'm not, I didn't stand alone, but at the time that you say something, you can't even look over your shoulder. You're running as hard as you can. You can't look over your shoulder and see if anyone's with you or not. You stand alone, and these congressmen that we have, and women, they want to remain congressmen. They have power, and they don't want to give it up.
We have just a few moments here. Could you just then go back and clarify for the listener the culpability that you feel the Bush administration does have with reference to the death, the brutal murder of your son, Nicholas?
Sure. Number one, they claim that Al-Qaeda killed my son. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq before George Bush's administration attacked Iraq. George Bush destabilized the country, and then Al-Qaeda came pouring in, much as Americans would pour into Canada if she were attacked. Number two, the Abu Ghraib prison atrocities that took place were the stated reason for my son's death. George Bush got Alberto Gonzalez to rewrite the definition of torture. He gave the word to Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld gave the wink and the nod right on down the chain of command until the 11 people who have been found guilty of this crime have taken all the blame for it. And, of course, they do deserve blame for it. But so do Donald Rumsfeld, Alberto Gonzalez, and George Bush. At the time, Donald Rumsfeld said, "I take full responsibility for what's happened." Well, he didn't take any responsibility. He didn't get as much as his wrist slapped. Nothing happened to him. He didn't lose his job. Nothing happened to him at all. My son is the one that took it. So I blame him for that as well. Thirdly, my son was illegally arrested by Iraqi police, immediately turned over to the American military who in Iraq, who, instead of saying, "Hey, that's illegal, this man didn't do anything wrong, you can't just arrest someone because he's an American and he doesn't work for Halliburton or Bechtel's, or he's not in the Army, you got to let him go." They didn't say that. They said, "Well, let's call in the FBI and see what they have to say." And the FBI detained my son for 13 days illegally until I filed a writ of habeas corpus. And those 13 days were vital days in the history of the war of Iraq, because right before Nick was released, 2 days before he was released, the atrocities of Abu Ghraib prison became public. The people in Fallujah and all over Iraq were ignited in their resistance to the American occupation. Everything escalated. In Fallujah, four Americans were killed, their bodies were burned, and two of the bodies were pulled around behind cars on ropes. And it was a whole different war. Nick was supposed to come home on March the 30th. He had a ticket on an airliner. He was supposed to be in his best friend's wedding on April the 2nd. What I'm talking about happened on April the 4th. Nick wasn't released until April the 6th. It was that illegal incarceration without any rights of due process that prevented my son from getting home alive. He would have made it on the 30th. He would have made it on April the 3rd. But from April the 4th on, there wasn't a chance. And that is why I hold the Bush administration totally culpable for my son's death.
And so in many respects, this is, to honor him, your Green Party candidacy.
My son and I differed 180 degrees on politics.
Oh, okay.
Supporter of George Bush. But I'll tell you what my son would feel honored by. When I would come home from an anti-war march, and he was pro, he thought Saddam Hussein had to be toppled and George Bush was doing the right thing. But nevertheless, when I would come home from a demonstration, he would say, "You know, Dad, you and I differ on our opinions about this war, but I really admire and respect you for standing up for what you believe in. And that's what I'm doing as someone that's trying to unseat an incumbent in the Green Party. I am standing up for what I believe in, pure and simple, and for what a lot of other Americans believe in and haven't had a candidate to vote for who would stand up for them.
Lastly, you make pointed observations regarding global warming. What steps would you take to alter the United States and the planet's course in this area?
Well, I think that what we need to do is stop using fossil fuels as quickly as we possibly can. Eliminate them. And we need to change the entire focus of the workforce and the economy of this country from one that is in the capital-rich venture of finding and procuring and refining oil to a labor-rich venture of manufacturing, researching solar panels, wind farms, and biodiesel fuels that we could replenish each year. And I think that that in itself would reduce the greenhouse gases that we're producing, and possibly, if it's not already too late, appease Mother Nature. Once again, Mother Nature doesn't politically make compromises and say, okay, you know, I know I'm demanding a 25% reduction in greenhouse gases in order not to cause catastrophe, but I'll settle for 12.5. You know, she doesn't do that. It's 25, it's 25. It doesn't matter how you, what politics you use. We've got to get off fossil fuel. And it's not because I hate the oil companies. I hate what the oil companies do to our planet. I hate what the oil companies do to get the oil that they need to get. But I don't hate the people in the oil companies, just what they do.
You've been listening to an interview with Michael Berg, Green Party candidate for Congress in the state of Delaware. Berg's son, Nick, was killed in Iraq after he was illegally detained by the U.S. military and FBI for 13 days in 2004. During his detention, news of U.S. torture at Abu Ghraib prison became public in both Iraq and the U.S. Nick Berg was released when Iraqis became united in their resistance to the American occupation. Berg holds the Bush administration responsible for his son's death. Thanks for listening.